Welcome back to Puckcast, folks, with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's fantasy hockey show. Hello, friends. I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario. You can follow me at Statsman22. My co-host, as always, AJ Scholes. Great follow at AJ Scholes 24, based in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. That's very close to RotoWire headquarters near Madison. Yeah, AJ, we are now to the point where we only have two teams left to go in this long two-month journey. And I defy anybody to say they had these two teams going to the final. It's a surprise entry. Two sunspots form the backdrop to the Stanley Cup final for Canadians. This is a bitter pill to swallow. I'll admit that. And I don't know how you feel about it, but two not very big NHL markets. I mean, they're trying to do something with Vegas to promote them and make it a bigger market than it is. But Florida, definitely not a big market there. So how do you feel about the landscape of the that forms the backdrop here?
I mean, I think it's exciting in general for the sport. You consider, they talk about part of what made Tampa such a, you know, has turned into a big spot there is that they won the Stanley Cup many years ago, early 2000s, I think, off the top of my head. And so I know Florida has won it in 96, so winning it again, having some more success, certainly good for them. Vegas has had a tremendous boost. You know, this will be their second finals in just their five seasons. I'm going to go with five. You know, so I think it's great for both cities, both organizations. As a Penguins fan, I could not care less. I have no deep-seated hatred for either of these clubs. So I am just here for good hockey, a good couple games, and to enjoy it. So no strong vested interest. I am wearing my Marc-Andre Fleury Golden Knights jersey, as is appropriate in this setting. But other than that, no strong ties to either organization or strong dislikes for either organization. And the Stanley Cup will stay in the United States for another year.
That's making it 30 years now, AJ. And that's starting to bother me a little bit, I got to admit. And I think I'd like to see my club make waves and get that streak ended next year if possible. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Speaking of our club, though, it looks like Kyle Dubas is very close to signing with Pittsburgh. What are you hearing there?
I mean, not much more than that. I heard they were going to give him the weekend here to kind of decide. You know, obviously, we had talked about the fact he made that statement about how, you know, it was there and nowhere else. But something in his tone upset Brendan Shanahan for some God only knows reason. Although then I'm comparing Brendan Shanahan to God, and I think he's the only one that agrees with that statement. but so, I mean, I haven't heard much more than that. I would expect this week if it happens. Otherwise, I would expect we'll hear from somebody else maybe next week. But, you know, a couple names have been tossed around. I've also heard possibly him moving a level up and being like president of hockey operations rather than the day-to-day GM. And bring in somebody else as the day-to-day GM. That was another rumor that I saw tossed out there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, and as far as Toronto goes, Brad Treliving is the only guy that has been interviewed, that is confirmed to have been interviewed locally. And it's apparent that they're casting a wider net because other names are cropping up. One of the most interesting ones that I heard just the other day was Doug Wilson, former Chicago Blackhawk player and a longtime senior exec with the San Jose Sharks, is a couple of years removed from being involved in the NHL, but maybe he has the itch to get back in a major market. And his name is a very intriguing one because he had a very nice run in San Jose and comes with a lot of credentials. I also think that the Leafs are going to wait till the end of this playoff because I wouldn't surprise me if they go and try and poach a senior exec from the Vegas club. That's what I'm hearing as another possibility. And so if that happens, the person in line possibly is a guy that I know a little bit, and I want to keep my mouth shut about the possibilities. I don't want to jinx it because it could work out very well locally for me. So that's a little tidbit of information that I can share, kind of share. But very interesting possibilities. Even the name Mark Bergevin was another one that was floated. Now, we've already had the experiment. We had Ken Dryden here for a while, and that worked out okay, but I don't know. As a deep-seated Leaf fan, I don't want to see anybody who has ties with the Montreal Canadiens coming here as a fallback on something that failed for him in Montreal. So Bergevin is not high on my list. He didn't really do much for the Canadiens, in fact, presiding over a nice playoff run. But in terms of draft history and trades, not a very good record there. So I would kind of fade that situation. But AJ, we will have lots of time for news and rumors. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be doing other shows. We'll tease that for a later announcement in our show. But we got to get back to what we saw most recently here. Conference finals reviews tops the list of things that we're going to address right now. We're going to go through the Vegas-Dallas series. And I broke it down in terms of all the games that were played in the series. And, of course, the big news with Jamie Benn being suspended for two games. That was a chance for the Vegas club to take advantage of a brain fart by the Dallas captain at a time early in that third game where Dallas was hoping to just hold serve and get back in this series. But they were already down 2-0 on the strength of a couple of narrow overtime losses. And when they came back to Dallas, it kind of fell apart in that third game. To me, that was the game, set, and match for the series. Comments from you, and then we'll go through some of the highlights and the stars in the set.
Well, I think they just wanted to get back at Jamie Benn in person. So they waited two games while he was suspended. And then when he was eligible to play again, that's when they decided to beat him, and in fantastic fashion with that 6-0 victory. So apparently they just wanted to, make him suffer after that situation.
Well, what I liked about this series, AJ, was the big guns on both teams were really heard from. You know, you look at the goal scoring, Marchessault, Stone, Carlson again, Stevenson, Barbashev, big names from the front lines of Vegas's attack. But then they closed it out with contributions from Carrier, Amadio, Kolesar. So they got scoring from all over their roster. And Aiden Hill emerged as a very competent netminder. You look at some of the stats that he put up in this series, two shutouts in the final, in the conference final. So he really held his own. It was a bit of a coming out party for him, for sure. And on the flip side, you know, Jason Robertson woke up for Dallas. Heiskanen was a factor. Hintz was a factor. Pavelski. So for me, I really like the fact that the big name players showed up in a big way for both teams. But I think Vegas really kind of overwhelmed Dallas with the pace of their game, and the stars that they had really were formidable in this series. Stone and Eichel also rising to the occasion. So big names for both sides, but I think there was just too much depth on the Vegas side to not be denied in pursuit of their second trip to the final. As you said, you nailed this, AJ. You had Vegas in six games. I picked Dallas in six. And I thought it was going to be a sweep early on, but at least Dallas made it a little bit interesting for a while. In the other set, AJ, Carolina and Florida, we both were on Carolina in this set. And how shocked were you with the way that Florida took early control over this?
I did not expect that outcome at all. We were both on the Hurricanes. And I just, game three, I expected a pushback from Carolina. They got solid netminding in that game, but Bobrovsky was better. And to look at this and say, a couple times Bobrovsky gave up three goals and that's his worst performance in that series is saying a lot. So they set the tone with that OT game that went on forever. And from there, they just never relented. And more disappointed with Carolina for never really getting that pushback than I am, surprised that Florida kept their foot on the gas, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, AJ. Much was said about Carolina before this series started that they had the second best team in the regular season. And well, we cautioned that by saying a couple of times in these playoffs that they were without a couple of key players in their lineup. They did get Toivo Teravainen back in the lineup to start the series. And I thought that was going to be a big plus, but that first game was a real telling thing with Florida. It was a war of attrition. It went four overtimes. And I tell you, I was sitting there watching the game, and I had the clicker in my hand, my converter in my hand, and I thought, I'm going to go to bed because I can't stand this. At the end of the fourth, I'm gone. And lo and behold, with 12 seconds left, the goal was scored to decide it, and Matthew Tkachuk scored it, AJ. And he was a bit maligned in the prior series for against Toronto, where he didn't really show up on the scoreboard, but he was all over it in this series, getting the overtime winners not just once but twice. The second game went only a couple of minutes in overtime. He netted that goal. And then, of course, he wound up the series in dramatic fashion late in the fourth game with yet another winning goal. So he accounted for three game-winning goals in this set and is full value for all the accolades that he's been getting as a result. He's just emerged as clearly the guy that stirs it and leads this club into battle and really, really making a name for himself in these playoffs and cementing himself as maybe the lead candidate for the Conn Smythe Trophy at this point. I would say it's been a battle between him and Bobrovsky, I would say, as well. Bobrovsky continuing that hot streak. The shots that he faced in this set were amazing. Well over 30 shots in the three of the four games, and the 65 in the other one. So about 140 shots almost in the whole series. And yet he still hasn't given up more than two goals in any games going back about three series now, AJ. So remarkable performance by him. And I don't think we've said as much positive stuff about Bobrovsky in the entire eight-year history of our show as we have in this spring.
That's not true. We said some nice things when he was in Columbus. That was only 4 years ago. But yeah, I mean, yeah, gave up three in that game four. But other than that, never gave up more than two to Toronto. You're looking a couple of games against, most of the games against Boston actually were three or more, but still got the wins in those. So that's really all that matters, right? 11 wins in 12 games. Just outstanding play by Sergei Bobrovsky.
No question. I mean, on the flip side, I want to give a nod to Freddie Anderson. He had been much maligned in his time in Toronto for some poor playoff results, but indicative of the quality of play on his side, too, were some really good numbers offensive in the nets. Consider that four overtime game. He faced 60 shots, turned aside 57. That was really something to see both goalies facing well over 60 shots, and yet it only wound up a 3-2 score. Then game two was much of more of the same. Antti Raanta was switched up in nets for Anderson. I don't know what you thought about that circumstance, but it seemed to me that they just wanted to make sure they had a fresh goalie going in, despite the fact it wasn't back-to-back games. But I thought it was an interesting ploy by Carolina, and a nod to the fact that they really didn't have a consensus number one goalie all year long, as the net mining had fallen not only between these two guys, but also between a third guy, Pyotr Kochetkov. And so the depth and goal was certainly shown off by Carolina, and I don't think they should be criticized for switching out the goalies. And really, when you boil it down, it was a 2-1 Florida win in that game, so you can't pin anything on Raanta in that one for my money. And as we say again, two wins on the road, and then they came back to Florida, and a signature performance by Bobrovsky, again a shutout in a 1-0 win, really cemented the series outcome for me, AJ. I don't know if you caught that game, but Florida just continued to play the way they have all series long, all playoffs long, with a high energy forecheck in place. And no team has been able to solve that aspect. Game four was a bit of a revelation because finally Bobrovsky gave up three goals, but still his team came out on top with a 4-3 win. So I was shocked by this outcome, I got to say, because Carolina, like I said, finished miles ahead of Florida in the regular season. And Florida really has found a formula for success in these playoffs and really have stuck to it despite the quality of opposition. Consider, they've taken out the first-place team in the regular season, the second-place team in the regular season, and the fourth-place team overall in the regular season on their way to the postseason appearance in the finals. So the full value to them. And, boy, they caught us napping, I guess, or by surprise, because you and I both had Carolina winning this thing early. How surprised were you? And when did you think that they had this thing in hand?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, if they had won, like, Game 7, even game six, I probably wouldn't have been surprised by the outcome of the series. I did obviously go into it thinking Carolina would win, but the fact that it went four, honestly, heading into game three, I thought Carolina would push back. They'd get a win. So after they dropped that one, I just didn't see anything in that game that told me that this was a team that's going to climb out of a 3-0 hole. And at that point, it was more of, is Carolina going to lose in game four or game five? Like, that's how it felt to me. So, after the game three is when I definitely switched to expecting Florida to win this. I think it's interesting, Paul, you mentioned the switch to Ranta. We saw that twice in this postseason where a goalie went long into the extra time, into overtime here, and then the backup or, you know, the other goalie came in. We saw that with Minnesota after Gustafsson faced, you know, 53 shots in a two overtime game. Then they went with Fleury the next one. And in neither scenario did the team that switched goalies after those long overtime games, both were losses. So kind of interesting little connection there. Putting in a relatively cold goalie, probably not the best plan, even if at the quality of, you know, Antti Ranta had some really good games this year. Obviously, Marc-Andre Fleury, multiple times Stanley Cup winner, but that switch just did not pan out for either club.
Right, but it is a bit of a revelation because we are used to seeing in playoff runs that teams will stick with one goalie. We're kind of seeing a changing of the mindset around the league in that way, and it goes hand in glove.
That's my point. Maybe we shouldn't be. It clearly didn't work out.
That's right. But, I mean, you look at the regular season, there's only a handful of goalies that played upwards of 60 games in the regular season for their team. So that number is getting smaller and smaller, and the value of a goalie in season-long pools is really dramatically spiked if you can get one or two of those top six guys that play 60 plus games. You really have a chance to run away with goaltending categories. That's one thing that I focus on in season long play, to get at least one guy who still has that profile, like a Connor Hellebuck does it year in, year out still. And there's a handful of other guys that still do. So again, that'll be a strategy that I look forward to implementing in the new season to come, because it's really a prime opportunity to get an edge on your opposition. And that's the tidbits that we give out are designed to share with you and get you that edge. So I hope you bookmark that comment and keep it in your back pocket for your upcoming drafts later in the summer. AJ, we're going to take a break now to give our sponsors some airtime. Then we're going to return to preview the Stanley Cup Final. We'll remind you all that you're listening to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. We're going to be back right after these.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Messages. Okay, we're back, and I want to give AJ a chance to remind our listeners we're heading into a key period in this offseason. There's going to be a lot of changes on a lot of teams, not just on the ice but off the ice, that will determine their trajectories next season, and we want to stay on top of that. We invite you to join us in that regard and question us along the way. So, AJ, how can our listeners get back in touch with us during the offseason?
Yeah, the best way to do that is over on Twitter. You can reach myself at AJSchultz24. You can reach Paul the Statsman at Statsman22 and come with, you know, you're going to have for Dynasty Leagues, you're going to have keeper questions that we're happy to help sort through those for you, maybe trade proposals. Obviously, at some point, we're going to have drafts coming up, and you might have, I'll find out, hey, I have the first overall pick. What do I do? Late first round pick. What do I do here? And we would love to help answer any and all of those questions for you.
AJ, I'm looking forward to the player movement that is part and parcel of the summer months in the NHL. It's now a 365-day commitment for those of us that are serious about doing well in pools and certainly getting ready for the daily fantasy games that start up before you know it in this October as well. To that end, before we get on with the Stanley Cup final, I want to make a note to our listeners that we will be doing a couple of shows in the off season. We'll touch on that in a few minutes, but so stick around for that. And also, we want to touch on the free agent frenzy that will happen in the summertime. Well, before we sign off today, we want to touch on a few of the names that are going to get a lot of interest, and maybe others that might, if they renege on their restricted free agent status. So a lot of key players could be available, and very intriguing offseason is ahead of us. But before that, we have a more than intriguing Stanley Cup final. The upstarts from Florida, they were the eighth seed, if you will, in the Eastern Conference. And lo and behold, they made it all the way to the finals. And Vegas, they were quiet for the first half of the regular season, but they came on like gangbusters, and they're quite a juggernaut too. So two teams that are red hot right now as they go into the Stanley Cup final make it a very compelling one in that regard. And when you look at the fact that they split two games in the regular season, not much of a form chart there, but it's worth noting both teams held serve at home, and we haven't seen much home ice success in these playoffs. That's another surprise for me. AJ, I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as you mentioned, it really has been kind of a theme for this series that there or for this playoffs, Raj, there, that home ice advantage hasn't really meant much of anything. So we'll have to see if that carries over into this one. As you mentioned, Paul, they both won at home during the regular season. So, you know, maybe that means something, but I'm guessing probably not. At this point, it probably doesn't convey a whole lot. We haven't seen it a ton. Florida has obviously won a ton of games on the road, both going up to Boston. They obviously won the two in Carolina here in this series. I think they took two up in Toronto, if I'm not mistaken, as well there, Paul. So
thanks.
that was not an intentional shot. That was more of just a statement of fact. But so, yeah, they've looked really good on the road.
AJ, I'm going to take us through the Florida lineup. And Or actually, I'd rather let you have the first serve here because I'm having some technical difficulties at the moment. But why don't you take a look at the Florida lineup and see how they project, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so the Panthers, you know, we've talked about the net mining. Obviously, Sergei Bobrovsky, that's not going to change anytime soon. He's their main guy moving forward after taking over for Lyon during that initial series. On forward, you know, it's Verhaeghe, Barkov, and Duclair make up, I'll call it 1A. Nick Cousins, Sam Bennett, and Matthew Tkachuk on 1B here. And really, Tkachuk is the reason that I call that line 1B. He's just been a driver of the offense the entire postseason, talking about 9 goals in 16 games, plus 12 assists, 9 of those points coming on the power play. We've talked about the game winners as well, ending overtime contests, preventing overtime contests. So really, with him on that line, I'll call it a 1B. You got Lusterin, Lundell, and Reinhardt as the third line, and Lomberg, Stahl, and White as the fourth. That's a really solid fourth line, especially when you consider it's centered by a guy in Eric Stahl who's won the Stanley Cup before. So you have a ton of veteran leadership on this team. They're just a really deep forward group. There's no, you know, a lot of times you get to that fourth line and you're like, like hopefully those guys aren't out there for more than like 6 minutes in a game or something. But this is a fourth line that could definitely handle more ice time if the situation called for it. Defensively, you've got Gustav Forsling and Aaron Ekblad, Mark Stahl and Brandon Montour, and then a third of Josh Mahura and Radko Gudas. Really set here. Montour has completely cooled. I think that's important to note. He came into that Boston series a ton of points, scored in game one versus Toronto. Since then, 8 games in a row without a single point. Still shooting the puck, 32 shots on net over the stretch, so 4 per game. That's a really good high average for him, but it is important to note that his production has all but pretty much dried up there. But, of course, they do still have Ekblad, who's capable of producing some points. Just 1 assist in the series. It did come on the power play, so they've relied, at least against Carolina, relied a little bit more heavily on the forward complement for the production. But also they had a 1-0 game and they just leaned on Bob to win that one. So this is a really deep team. It's a really good team. If they get Brandon Montour scoring points again, they are going to be a huge challenge for the Golden Knights.
Well, and in the departure from what we've done in the past where I take the other side, I'm going to do my own deep dive on the Florida side too, AJ, just to underscore some of the points that you made. But to me, what's really apparent with this club is the commitment to forechecking. As I noted when the series against Toronto, and it was quite the same in their last series against Carolina, they were right on top of the defenseman, even at the goal line behind the nets of the opposition, to meet the defenseman as soon as they got the puck. So there was no opportunity a lot of times for them to get their breakouts in order, and that led to all kinds of trouble for Carolina as well defensively as we saw in the Toronto series as well. It's just a real shocking level of success that Florida had with their high intensity forecheck game, and it's 4 lines deep, like you mentioned. Like Ryan Lomberg is a real pest, and he was right in on them on the Carolina defense, just like Colin White and Eric Stahl, the fourth liners. Lustarainen is making a name for himself as a top defensive forward in that third unit. Sam Reinhardt is a bit of a luxury for them on the third line to have a scoring threat like him, and the toughness that he brings is great. And Lundell, a good face-off man. And then you get to the top 6, and Nick Cousins used to be a fourth liner in previous stops in the NHL, but really found a home with Bennett and Tkachuk on like the 1B line that you talked about. And I kind of was worried about Alexander Barkov after he really was a no-show in the Toronto series, but he had a very nice coming out party in the Carolina set, scored a couple of goals and really cemented himself as what we're used to seeing, one of the premier two-way centers in the game, centering 2 very quick wingers in Duclair and Verhaeghe to give this team a very good look. And a reminder, we touched on it the last time we did the series preps, that Florida did win the President's Trophy last year. They kind of limped into the playoffs this year, and but for a a late season loss by the Penguins, which you probably are still thinking about, to Chicago. They might not have even made the postseason, but here they are. And I haven't touched on the defense, but the big reason why, in my opinion, they have the luxury of three offensively capable defensemen who can play well in their defensive end as well. I'm talking about Ekblad, Montour, and Forsling, of course. I was a little worried about the foot speed of Mark Stahl, but he has survived and is a good complement to Montour, maybe the defensive conscience that allows him to freewheel a little bit. And Radko Gudas is that prototypical defenseman that you love to have on your side, but you hate him as an opponent. And that just maybe defines why he's been such a key part of the depth of the Florida club and the defensive structure of the team. And, of course, Bobrovsky has been lights out in these playoffs and is no worse than the second-best candidate for the MVP. At the worst, I would say, it's between him and Tkachuk right now. But if Vegas does come through, you can bet that several of those guys are going to be in contention for that award. And with that said, I'll give you the opportunity to give a first blush on what you see out of the Vegas roster, AJ.
Yeah, well, I'll just touch base on something you just said. Current odds over on the DraftKings Sportsbook, our friends over there, Bobrovsky the favorite right now at +210 to win the Conn Smythe Trophy, Tkachuk at +290, then Eichel, Marchessault, Carlson, and Stone round out the top six options there, at least, like I said, according to the DK Sportsbook. So interesting one to follow and see what happens there. And we'll see who comes away with that. So as far as what the Vegas Golden Knights look like, similarly to what we saw in Florida, the key to their success, in my opinion, has been the emergence of Adin Hill, who, I have said multiple times, has played some of the best hockey in his career. We saw a little bit of a regression in games four and five there against Dallas, gave up three goals on 42 shots, four goals on 34 shots, still pretty heavy volume. And I think that's part of what got them through in game six there, that Vegas was able to shut down those opportunities. Hill only faced 23 shots, stopping all of them, but 7-3 in his 11 postseason performances here, 2.07 goals against average. So numbers aren't quite as good as Bobrovsky's have been, but certainly he has cemented himself as their preferred netminder. We have obviously Jonathan Quick waiting in the wings. No real update yet on Laurent Brossoit or Logan Thompson as far as returning from injury for either of those guys. I think even if they did, it would be a mistake to switch at this point. Adin Hill has just looked so good for them. As the forward complement, you've got kind of what I would call the big line here. Jack Eichel, Jonathan Marchessault, and then Ivan Barbashev has been tasked with being the right wing or the left winger rather on that group. Obviously, just playing there, that's made him a bit of a DFS darling, if you will, playing on that top group. And he showed off that 6 points in the six games against Dallas. Really strong postseason for him. Your second line is Riley Smith, William Karlsson, and Michael Amadio. Good, solid group. Nothing flashy about this trio. Then Brett Howden, Chandler Stephenson, and Mark Stone make up the third line. I would almost argue, again, that's more of like a 2B, or even if you told me it was your 2A line, honestly, I would take that. I mean, you've got Stephenson, who's on the number one power play, Stone, who's on the number one power play again. Very quiet end of the series for Stone. No points in the final four games against Dallas. Probably most notable for the fact of getting cross-checked that resulted in the suspension for Jamie Benn, and also got slashed and was got a fine for Max Domi in that one as well. So Stone definitely took a beating in that one. William Carrier, Nicholas Waugh, and Keegan Kolesar currently the fourth line, though Teddy Bluger has also seen some opportunities. He played in the early part of the Dallas series, was a healthy scratch for the last two games. So him and Waugh could switch out periodically on that one. So we'll have to wait and see who plays. But good, solid, again, a deep forward group that's able to have a guy like Teddy Bluger who they can plug up into the fourth line. if they want to go with him instead of somebody else there. So strong group there. Defensively, Alex Petrangelo and Alec Martinez as the top pairing, Braden McNabb, Shea Theodore, Nicholas Haig, and Zach Whitecloud as the rest. Really, again, they've got offensive guys in Petrangelo, although, again, quiet end to the Dallas series for him, just 1 point in the last five games. Decent number of shots, 14 shots on goal, so almost three per game. And then, of course, you've got Shea Theodore as well, capable of producing offensively at periods. Another one that had kind of a quiet end. So they relied a little bit more on their overall depth, I think. I would say this team has used their depth to get past, get into this round and to get past Dallas. We'll see how that pairs up against a team like Florida that's already pretty deep. So that's my take on the Vegas Golden Knights, Paul. What do you see?
Well, what I see is, again, a trend that we're seeing across the league of some of the better teams, AJ, where they've taken maybe their six best forwards, and they, instead of loading up on two lines, they put pairs on three lines to get more length out of their roster. So you got Stone and Stevenson on the third line. You got Carlson and Smith on the second line. The first line, Eichel and Marchessault. That's to say that it's a bit of a step down for Barbashev, Mario, and Howden, but they are really good compliments, and they all factor into the scoring. And you talk about factoring into the scoring, how about that fourth line? Each of those guys found the net in that last series. So it's great to have a credible offensive threat coming from your fourth line. Not many teams can say that. And maybe that's one of the big reasons why Las Vegas finds themselves where they are with the success that they've had. They haven't even been pressed in your buddy into service. Phil Kessel has been on the sidelines. Teddy Bluger getting very little bit of ice time. But again, in reserve, you're talking five lines deep now in the depth chart that has got lots of weapons in it for Vegas. And then they lean heavily on the top four on the blue line, AJ, and they got to make sure that they get through unscathed to give themselves the best shot to lift the chalice at the end of the series. Petrangelo, Martinez, McNabb, and Theodore, they'll account for about 45 minutes of playing time, leaving Haig and Whitecloud to get about 15 minutes each if all goes well. And they don't want to play extra time against Florida the way that the Panthers have excelled in overtimes this series, this season. But, I mean, Vegas has had their own overtime success. I just think that defensively it could be a problem if they log more minutes on the Vegas side with some of the older guys they got on the blue line there. And in the Nets, interesting note about Aiden Hill, AJ, he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. You don't think he's going to have an interesting contract negotiation and plenty of suitors out there in the offseason, don't you? It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And I'll be looking forward to seeing how things shake out in the Vegas goaltending mix, because I thought when they made the trade for Jonathan Quick, I know he didn't have a great year in Los Angeles, but I thought his playoff pedigree would at least keep him in the mix here, but he hasn't got a sniff in this postseason, and nor should he, the way that Aiden Hill is playing. But it's just interesting for me to note that Quick, with the playoff resume that he has in his back pocket, really hadn't be a factor, and Aiden Hill has really had a nice coming out party. Look at the goaltending matchup. Who would have dreamt Bobrovsky and Aiden Hill, your Stanley Cup goaltenders, Stanley Cup final goaltenders? You would have had long odds there to see about that taking place for sure. So just another aspect of this postseason that is rare and intriguing at the same time. So that said, AJ, we have to come up with our picks for this series, and I've been going back and forth. I think it's going to be a long one, and I think the magic of Florida and the intensity of their forecheck is what tilts the scale in their favor, in addition to the way that Bobrovsky's been rock solid. I'd say he gets it done again, and really, based on his experience, gives them an edge in that over Aiden Hill. I just wonder about him on the biggest stage there is in the NHL. And so give the nod to Florida in a six-game series. What about you?
Well, if these numbers are correct, which I'm going to assume they are, it shows Paul going 7-7 in all the previous series and AJ going 6-8. So my only hope of tying you is to go with the Vegas Golden Knights. And I can certainly convince myself that that's the right play as well. I do think they're getting solid net minding. They have, you know, they have Jack Eichel, who's obviously very motivated, Jonathan Marchessault. And, you know, we said they almost have like a fifth line waiting in the wings, ready to go here. So I'll go with Vegas. I haven't, you know, it'll probably bite me in the butt because the only time I picked Florida so far was against Toronto. that one worked out great. But other than that, you know, I've been wrong on Florida all the way. But I had Vegas ahead of Dallas in the last round. And I think they'll do it again here, getting that first Stanley Cup in organization history.
Well, AJ, by the time we get back to talking about hockey on this show, the Stanley Cup will have been presented, and we're going to take a bit of a sabbatical into the later part of the summer. But we begin our summer schedule, and we want to share that with our listeners. Routinely, what we do is that we get together after the amateur draft, where there's going to be a lot of trades and player movement along with the top players drafted, that we see kids graduating out of junior with hopes of embarking on an NHL career in the near, not too distant future as well. Couple of signature players, one as well who has acquitted himself in the just completed World Hockey Championships across the pond. Fantilli is the guy who's second ranked in the NHL draft rankings, and he was a part of Team Canada's roster that won the gold medal over there. So Adam Fantilli is a player to watch. Connor Bedard, of course, could help catapult Chicago into significant prominence in the very near future. Much is expected of the young man. A lot of pressure in one of the NHL's most important markets. They need to resurrect some level of success in Chicago, and they're going to probably be saying bye-bye to a couple of stalwarts who have been around for years, as we will talk about that in a few minutes. But in terms of our summer schedule, we'll begin with coming back to you sometime after the amateur draft to speak about what happened there and cover off any trades and player movement that we see between now and then. Certainly coaching and management roles will be filled by that point as well. So plenty to talk about then. And then I look forward to the free agent frenzy in July that starts on July 1st or around about. And that's when players look to get signed up and get ready to play with existing teams if they re-up, or new teams if they find greener pastures. So plenty of off-season movement will be highlighted in those two episodes that we do. And then, of course, in September, we do our previews of the divisions that we're used to doing, a division preview every week before the regular season does begin. So it's a 365-day proposition, and I love every second of it, AJ. We're drawing to the close on our eighth season, and I want to thank you again for being my partner in crime on this. It's been a lot of fun, and I hope we've given our listeners plenty of food for thought again this season. Any final thoughts from you?
Oh, just looking forward to a fantastic series here. Should be a lot of fun, and hopefully we'll get a long one. I'd rather have a long one here than a short one. So maybe a couple more overtimes, maybe six, seven game series. So yeah, let's see what happens.
All right, my friend. Well, we thank our loyal listening audience once again for tuning in this season to RotoWire's podcast with Statsman and AJ. Please note that our next episode will come your way at some point around the amateur draft. Stick around our social media on our Twitter feeds. You'll get more information there when things crystallize. As always, remind you that we're here to help you with all things relating to your enjoyment of fantasy hockey. So we encourage you to send your comments or questions always on Twitter, where you can also follow me, Paul Bruno, at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchultz24. So long, everybody, and thanks for listening.